1029 The Hog presents another Bob and Brian podcast.
This Bob and Brian On Demand is brought to you by Marcus Theaters. Select locations are now open. Come experience the big screen again in a safe and comfortable environment. Purchase tickets and order food in advance at MarcusTheaters.com or on the Marcus Theaters mobile app. Your seat is waiting.
It's time to talk music news with our music expert, Gary Graff. Good morning, Gary. How are you?
All right. How are you guys doing?
I feel good this week. I feel good because, well, we'll get to it in just a second. Gary Graff is brought to you by Kohler Credit Union. Are you in need of a new vehicle? Check out KohlerCreditUnion.com for their special rates going on now.
I have a sore throat.
Oh, boy. Not the Rona, is it?
No, last time I had this very same sore throat, I had strep throat.
Yeah. So
I think I might have it again.
Oh.
Keep them on the other side of the glass there.
Yeah.
6 feet apart, Gary. Six feet apart. Here we go.
Antisocial distance.
I feel good because Phil Collins is getting his house back, but I don't feel good about the fact that he can't get it back till January.
Yeah, this is kind of the situation. You know, we've been following this puppy for a few weeks now. So he succeeded in court, you know, in Florida. The judge sided with Phil Collins that his ex.
Well, it seems reasonable since it's his house.
Well, exactly. Well, it's their house. In the legal frame, it's there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
The ex-wife and her new husband had kind of, you know, commandeered the place. And so the judge basically said, no, it's joint property. You can't do what you're doing. The judge isn't ordering them out, but the ex-wife and the new husband have agreed to vacate by mid-January. In the meantime, the house is going to go up on the market immediately.
So he's just selling it. He doesn't even want back in it. He just wants...
He's going to sell it. I mean, I guess he could buy her out of it.
But, you know, once your wife marries another dude...
We bought the house for us to live in, not for you, right. Me, and your new husband to live in.
Right. The new dude should just train wreck that whole thing. It's like,
I think psychologically the best thing to do is sell it and be done with it.
But when you buy the house with your, and this is maybe a bad idea, it turns out like it probably was for the
buy
two
a
of
house
them,
with your ex-wife.
With your ex-wife. You don't think you're going to have to tell her,
but you're...
You can't
new
bring,
husband can't live here.
Then you have. Then we're not living together anymore. Right?
How stupid does that sound? But that's what happened.
Yeah,
it's been such a mess. But at least it looks like they're going to clear it up a little bit.
So can Phil turn all his attention to getting into rehearsals with Genesis now?
Well, he has to arrange to get all his stuff out of the house. Apparently, there's a lot of memorabilia, including he's a major collector, one of the world's foremost collectors of Alamo artifacts.
Yeah,
and he has just a ton of that stuff at the house, so he has to get all of that out. But he is in England at the moment rehearsing with Genesis for dates that they hope to be able to do next year. They were supposed to be going on like now or just about now, and they of course got postponed, and they're hoping that they'll be able to do them in the time frame for next year. I think that's being a little optimistic, but you know, we'll see. There are places in Europe that have reopened in a more significant way. So it's possible Britain will be able to do it. Right now, Britain's in lockdown.
Hard lockdown, as a matter of fact. How many bands are anticipating that next summer things will kind of be coming back to what was normal and being able to get on tour? I mean, how many are scheduling dates, I guess?
Oh, there are a ton of dates already. You know, tours that were going to take place this year that have been pushed into the summer of 2021, even some into the spring of 2021. I still think that's wishful thinking. I mean, I guess it's what you do, you know, because if we're fortunate and we can't open up, you don't want to have to do the mad dash to get the tour up and running, to get the dates booked. You may, you know, so book them, have it in place, and then be ready to postpone again if that's necessary.
I know this is one of your favorites every year, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductions.
Yeah.
I know you really enjoy this one.
Well, I was supposed to be there.
Right, now I was going to say, but it's
Cleveland.
Actually,
I would be in Cleveland today.
It's all different this year with, you know, everything being remote locations. So how are they going to run this on HBO?
Well, Well, I've actually seen the special. They've pre-filmed it. It's probably the shortest Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony ever.
Yeah.
Just a little over 2 hours, and they put together a TV show. You know, they have induction speeches. People like Ringo Starr, Bruce Springsteen, Dave Grohl. A lot of good people. Luke Bryan do the induction speeches, and they have recaps of each of the inductees' careers. A lot of good footage. So a lot of stuff we haven't seen before, and then acceptance speeches.
What is it about that makes it your favorite? Because you do a lot of music stuff every year. I mean, you go to festivals, you go to awards, all that stuff. Why is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame your favorite?
It's just really happy.
Okay.
I mean, even despite controversies over who's getting inducted, who shows up, who doesn't show up.
Yeah, there's always the preliminary catfighting that goes with
always,
it, isn't there?
Maybe that's part of what I love about it.
Okay.
It's great to cover. It's great to cover that stuff. But the actual event and night itself, it's very happy. Especially when it's in Cleveland, where it's a little more laid back than in New York. And so, you're more likely to see fans rubbing elbows with the inductees, who are just hanging around town.
And it's a short drive for you from Detroit.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you can be down there. How long is it to Cleveland from Detroit?
About 3 hours.
3 hours, yeah.
And then I've got family in Cleveland, so it's a good excuse.
Oh, there you go.
It's nice. So it's a nice.
Do you stay
nice
with session. Cousins, or do you stay with your aunt and uncle?
No, I stay at a hotel that's near everything.
What?
Well,
Gary,
you know,
we have plenty of room when you're here in Cleveland. Stay with us.
And it's been offered. It's been offered.
Our lumpy
band. Do you want me staggering in after Bon Jovi's Rock Hall party, reeking of Richie Zambora?
Don't be silly. You're always welcome here.
Gary, is that you?
Yep.
Hey, speaking of which, is it your birthday?
It might be. Yes, Michael McDonald had said they would sing happy birthday to me tomorrow.
What?
Yep.
Michael McDonald.
I'm missing out on that.
I have one Michael McDonald story.
Okay.
We're at the Hard Rock in New York a million years ago. Had to be 35 years ago at least. And it was a big party, radio thing, whatever. And Michael McDonald's having dinner. And I was walking by him, and he looked up and we made eye contact. And I just said, I wanted to make it quick because I knew he was eating. I just said, Michael, I loved your stuff with the Doobie Brothers and whatever he's doing at the moment. Just, real quick. And he stops and he starts talking. He said, I don't want to interrupt your dinner. He goes, it's not a problem when people interrupt your dinner. It's when people stop interrupting your dinner that I have a problem.
That's very wise.
So,
well, happy birthday to
you
tomorrow.
And tell Michael I said hi.
Well, I'm not going to see him, but next time I talk to him, I will.
You know, funny you brought up Michael McDonald because I listened to a playlist of him over the weekend, all his Motown stuff.
Yeah, oh yeah, that was great.
Those are great albums.
Some other Rock Hall things just to know. So in conjunction with all of this, and there's a lot else going on. They just started a podcast of the famous induction speeches. So you can hear some of those. There will be a virtual red carpet at 5:45 on their social media tomorrow, and then they did, because we have not heard anything about next year, the class of 2021 yet. So they did reveal that they're going to completely change the timeline permanently now, and basically nominees will be announced in February, and then the voting will take place. The inductees will be announced probably sometime in the summer, with the ceremony moving permanently to the fall, to November.
Foo Fighters, their 10th album that they're going to?
It's going to be their 10th album. It's interesting. This is an album they actually played earlier in the year before the lockdown to some music journalists overseas. And then they just put it on hold once the virus hit. Now these posters and billboards have started to surface in Los Angeles with the band's logo and a big X, as in the Roman numeral for 10. At various spots. So this is, everybody thinks they're getting ready to announce its release. And I wouldn't be surprised if they do it this year, before the end of the year. I could see it popping out. They may want to stay out of the way of November of AC/DC and Paul McCartney and some of the significant releases of November. But yeah, pop it out in early December. That's what AC/DC did with their last album.
And you can catch them on Saturday Night Live, too.
Yeah, they're the music guests on Saturday Night Live. So I think that's when they're going to do the announcement. My bet is the way it'll play out is they'll do a song. I don't know if it'll be a new song. And then, usually when the right after they perform, you get the, hey, buy so-and-so's music on you know, Twitter and Apple Music, yada, yada. My bet is they'll use that spot to announce the album.
Remember where all we could, Carrie and I could focus on was that Gordon Lightfoot documentary?
Yep.
And you said, I'll let you know when and where it's available, and you did, and we watched it, and we never brought it up again.
Uh-huh.
Because Carrie and I said, God, that was really boring. That was a really boring documentary.
It was scholarly.
Was it bad?
It was just...
It's dry.
I wouldn't call it bad. It wasn't as interesting as I thought it was going to
dry,
be.
Dry, like nothing.
Yeah, I mean,
new.
There wasn't a lot of pizzazz. I didn't think.
No.
Wasn't a lot of humor.
No. He had a drink. He drank a lot for a while. Then he stopped drinking.
He didn't reveal anything like, well, Phil Collins and his Alamo collection.
Yeah, no.
I'm using that as a real example.
Listen, dude's Canadian. Okay, not that much happens to those people.
They live nice lives. It's really Canadian, I would say.
It was really kind of like.
Hmm. Oh, okay, well, I guess that's okay. But the Bee Gees have a documentary coming out. And even though they sang all those love songs and How Do You Mend a Broken Heart and all that stuff, those guys fought a lot as brothers. I know.
Oh, sure.
Barry Gibb said his biggest regret is his last conversation with Robin, his brother, was an argument, a big argument.
Robin was apparently the problem child. You know, he left the band for a period of time, and the Bee Gees were a duo. So he was the problem child of the band. But yeah, this is the Bee Gees, How Can You Mend a Broken Heart documentary. It's going to premiere December 12th on HBO. And yeah, all the reports about it are good, made by good people, good documentarians. Some of the participants in it, Eric Clapton, Noel Gallagher, Nick Jonas, Chris Martin from Coldplay, Justin Timberlake, Mark Ronson, Morris's first wife, Lulu, the singer. Executives who worked with them. Apparently, it's very well done.
Have you gotten a sneak peek at it yet?
I've seen the trailer. And I talked with, yesterday, I was talking to Desmond Child, the songwriter and producer, and he's seen the whole thing, and he says it's great.
And Barry's the only surviving...
Correct.
All the rest are gone, yeah.
Gibb, yep. Brother.
Andy, then Maurice. Is it Morris or Maurice?
Morris.
Morris.
I always used to say Maurice.
Yeah.
And then,
but
you'd be talking to him and they'd say like Morris and you'd be like, who?
Right, but it's spelled like Maurice.
It's spelled like Maurice.
It's not M-O-R-R-I-S. It's Morris. Okay.
Yeah, Morris, right. I've heard him say it and I always get it wrong anyway.
So that's coming December 12th.
Taylor Swift is going to record her old albums, re-record.
Yep, she had said she was going to do this, you know, going back to June of 2019, so a year and a half ago almost. Scooter Braun, Justin Bieber's manager, bought her label, Big Machine Records, which included the rights to her catalog, which she did not like at all. A little bit of a war of words, and then she said, well, I'm just going to go back and re-record those five albums as soon as the contract allowed, which is, you know, November 1, 2020. So as long as nobody's touring or anything else, Taylor has plenty of time to go into the studio and recut her first five albums. I really thought they'd come up with they'd come to terms, you know, and work out something, because you know, there will be two versions of each of these albums out now.
There will be the original,
the Big Machine version, and the newly recorded Taylor Swift edition.
Scooter Braun owns the masters, right?
Correct.
But now, if he re-records those, does she own the rights to the tunes, or how does that work?
She owns the rights to the songs, and she'll own the rights to her recordings of them. That's what the deal specified.
Okay,
so she owns the publishing on her songs yet?
No, she has. She has the publishing.
Right. She shares that. Oh, she shares that with.
Most likely, she shares. She shares it.
This is where the music industry always is confusing for me. Because when you sign with a record company, they always want the publishing.
They want everything now.
Right.
They sign what they call a 380 deal.
Because that's where the real money is in the publishing.
They want at least a share of publishing. They want merchandise. If you buy a Taylor Swift song or something, they want a cut of that. They want everything that's part of your artistic life, whereas before, those were separate deals.
Why is Wolfgang Van Halen lashing out at, U.S. Weekly?
Us Weekly. Yeah.
Us Weekly.
They have a cover story. Their new cover story is Valerie Bertinelli, staying strong after Eddie's death, but it's not a new story. You know, they basically repurpose a bunch of things about, Valerie talking about Eddie and her time with with him and their marriage, and you know, but it's all from old interviews, but it's being put out there and presented as if it's a new story. And there's a lot of supposition in it about where she fit into Eddie during his last days and all of that. So Wolfgang has basically gone on a social media rage saying, basically saying F you to Us Weekly, as well as, you know, anybody else who's spreading rumors and misinformation.
Does he understand that they need to sell magazines and it's getting more and more difficult every single week?
Yeah, well, one of the things he put in his message is, I know a lot of you are going to say, just ignore it, bro, but he says, I'm not going to stand by and let people publish lies and make my family tragedy somebody else's entertainment. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't sound, you know, when I say raging, he's not, his head hasn't exploded, but he's just not having it, which is his prerogative as not only the son, but the only son and a bandmate of his father's.
All right, two more things before we go, because Brian always likes to get the Britney Spears news in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she has formally filed papers in Los Angeles to dump her father as her conservator. Her attorney says in the filings that if her father retains his position, it will cause her, quote, to suffer loss and injury. You know, that's not physical, but financial. So, and apparently one of the big issues took place in October when Britney's manager abruptly resigned and the father hired new management without consulting or even telling Britney. So she's asking the judge out in L.A. to appoint this. It's called Bessemer Trust Company. She wants them to handle her conservatorship and her affairs, and there will be a hearing on November 10th. So that's
Isn't this about the 10,000th time she's tried to get out from under this?
This is the first big legal one.
Okay,
it's like, okay, we're in court. And she also, by the way, she did post an Instagram message during the week too, telling everybody, "Hey, it's Britney. I'm fine. I'm the happiest I've ever been in my life. Sending you guys prayers, wishes, and lots of loves."
Is she fine?
She says she is. You know, and in a lot
Gary,
of ways.
Listen, Gary,
Gary. Money is, go ahead.
Is she fine?
She's all right.
Okay.
I think she's all right.
All right. And finally, Uriah Heep.
Yeah.
That's on your list too. And earlier this morning, we actually looked it up. Like, what is or who is Uriah Heep? And do you know the whole story behind Uriah Heep, the name?
Was he an agriculturalist? No, or a Dickens character?
It's a Dickens character.
Dickens.
Exactly.
Jethro Tull's the agriculturalist.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah.
The Dickens character.
And that's what I said. Wow, the Brits really love to grab those names.
Oh, yeah.
Back
You grew up with that stuff.
Yeah, Uriah Heep was a unscrupulous bookkeeper in a Dickens story.
Yep.
So, Brian pointed this out. Another bookkeeper, you know?
Right. Bob Cratchit, yeah. Uriah Heep.
Oh yeah, but the this is Ken Hensley, who was Uriah Heep's keyboard player from 1970 to 80, and wrote the big hits. He wrote Easy Livin'. He wrote Stealin'. He passed away on Tuesday at the age of 75. Interestingly, guess who had an interview set up with him for Thursday?
Really?
Yes. For this past Thursday or this coming Thursday? It doesn't matter.
This past Thursday.
Really?
Interesting. So I got a message on Tuesday saying, oh, they need to reschedule the interview for next week. He's not feeling well. And that's exactly what the email said.
Really?
And so fine, because there's a 50th anniversary of Uriah Heep box set coming out, so they're doing some interviews, and then we rescheduled the interview, and then lo and behold, Wednesday, you know, he really wasn't feeling well.
What's the best Uriah Heep song?
Oh boy, I always like Sweet Lorraine.
Okay, all right. I really don't know him that well. I know Stealin' and Easy Livin'.
There are about 4 years of albums. They were critically like just reviled. I mean, they were considered the worst of the worst. But you know, I liked them. You know, I was the right age. I was a teenager.
Reviled. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. They were the Nickelback of the 70s.
Okay. That's interesting.
All right. Well, you can continue being a teenager in your mind.
Yeah.
Happy birthday again this weekend.
Thank you.
All right, Gary. We'll talk to you next week. All right, Gary Graff, our music guy.